May it please the court, counsel. Candace Rosenberg was licensed to prescribe Schedule 2 through 4 controlled substances. She had an independent practice as a licensed nurse practitioner. Her patients were uninsured for the most part, and she operated a fee-for-service practice. She met her patients. She spent time talking with them. She examined them. She testified that she was interested in helping her patients who were suffering pain from various physical ailments. The record shows cases where she consulted physicians her patients had seen. She obtained her patients' medical records. There are cases where she refused to write prescriptions when a would-be patient failed to provide records, where she cut back on patients' medications, where she referred patients to pain clinics and to physicians, and in one case where she reported a patient who had lied to her about her name to that patient's parole officer, an action that landed the patient back in jail. And she also then consulted that patient's prior treating physicians. Healthcare providers who are licensed to prescribe controlled substances attract drug abusers. That does not make the provider's work unlawful. As this court's decision in Chube stated, the patient, it's not enough that a practitioner's prescription of controlled substances was even disreputable or negligent or even unethical. It has to be shown that the practitioner acted with intent to act as a drug pusher and not as a medical practitioner. The government's case, its arguments and witnesses seem to attempt to show that Ms. Rosenberg was engaged in poor or substandard practices, practices that would make it more likely that that drug abusers would be able to fool her into prescribing controlled substances simply to which the patients wanted, not to address actual medical needs, but to satisfy their cravings for the drugs. Again, if a practitioner is fooled, that does not make the practitioner's action of prescribing the drug.
I'm not sure where you are going. This is the sort of argument you might make to a district court, but you've got findings of fact by the district court to contend with, and I don't hear you arguing that they're clearly erroneous.
This court in Chube required required a sentencing court to make individualized findings that each prescription that was being adduced as relevant conduct was unlawful. And the district court, in sentencing, in applying the guidelines, did not make that sort of individualized finding fact. Its findings of fact were more global and generalized, and indeed, I think the.
What's wrong? If a district court says all the prescriptions written with respect to X were outside the normal course of medical practice, one would think that would be sufficient. The district judge doesn't have to say the prescription written on Monday was outside the normal course of medical practice. The prescription written on Wednesday was outside the. Right? What's the problem with saying all the prescriptions written to X were outside the course of medical practice?
Well, that appears to be what the district court did in Chube, and this court found that sort of general acceptance of, or the court's general finding that everything was illegal, was not adequate. Now here, Ms. Rosenberg said that said that she was writing the prescriptions to address what she saw as medical needs.
And the district court found that she was a liar.
Well, and the district court's assessments, again, global assessments, were, I don't think, can be relied on. Remember, the district court, in assessing her credibility, for example, said that your claim that you never learned how to chart is simply not credible. Well, I've looked at the record. I see nowhere that Ms. Rosenberg made a statement that she had never learned how to chart. Instead, Ms. Rosenberg talked about how she her training in making charts.
See, the problem I have here in a case like this is that you are happy, I assume, to get a three-level reduction for acceptance of responsibility, but then you don't really contest too much this general application of finding these things, because you'll lose acceptance of responsibility if you do that.
Well,
I think that's what happens here. You got an 82-count indictment, plead guilty to one count, question a few of them, but not the general scheme of the way she was doing business with the judge found to be very shocking. Frightening, I guess, were her words.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I think the problem here is that the judge and everybody really misapprehended what the government needed to prove and what the judge needed to find. It needed to show not...
Well, would you be willing to forego your three-level reduction for acceptance of responsibility and go back to the district court and get into more detail on these various counts that were used as relevant conduct? I don't think you'd want to do that.
Well, I'm not... I'm not sure that that sort of contesting, if the government is advancing a claims of relevant conduct that are grounded on a misconception of what it has to prove, then I would say I don't think that a defendant should lose acceptance of responsibility for challenging that sort of misconceived assertion of relevant conduct. But if that's a risk that would have to be run, then in this case I think that would be I think that's something that the defendant might well consider. There are any further questions? Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Peralta. Mr. Cannell.
Good morning. My name is Paul Connell. I'm a federal prosecutor in Madison, Wisconsin. I was responsible for the prosecution of Ms. Rosenberg before the district court. There are two straightforward issues raised on this appeal. The first, whether the district court clearly erred when it overruled the defendant's objections that prescriptions to four individuals were outside the usual course of professional practice, and then whether the district court made sufficient findings at sentencing with regard to those prescriptions. And the second issue is whether the defendant waived, or if not waived, whether she forfeited appellate review of any claim with respect to prescriptions that she wrote but did not object to for the district court. Turning to the first issue, here the district court did not clearly err and made sufficient findings. At sentencing, the district court took nearly 3 hours of evidence, heard from a government expert nurse practitioner, the government case agent, the defendant herself, and then rebuttal testimony by the government expert, at the conclusion of which the district court found that the defendant was not credible, that she closed her eyes to obvious drug-seeking behavior, and found that her real motive was to sell prescriptions for what the market could bear. The district court made sufficient findings here. The district court referred to the challenged prescriptions at sentencing as illegal, and that's found at page 69 of the sentencing transcript. And twice, Judge Crabb stated that the prescriptions were written outside the normal course of professional practice, and that's found at page 61 and 67 of the sentencing transcript. The defendant relies on Chube for the proposition that a district court must go prescription by prescription and explain why the prescriptions are illegal. As we point out in our brief, Chube is easily distinguishable. The defendants there were acquitted on nearly all counts, and then at sentencing, both the court and the government expert were very unclear as to what made the prescriptions illegal. They referred to quote-unquote numerous files, quote-unquote many files. Here the district court's, the entire sentencing proceeding was confined to a discrete set of patients and prescriptions. The district court, again, at the conclusion of taking evidence, found all the prescriptions were illegal, and that's based not only on the facts that she adopted from the pre-sentence report, but from the testimony she heard. And unless there are questions on the first issue, I will turn to the waiver issue.
There's a written plea agreement in this case. Why? Maybe some big effort was made to get an agreement on what the relevant conduct was here, which would have certainly obviated the problems that...
We generally don't do that in the Western District, Your Honor, but
you don't do that?
We generally do not.
Why not? I mean, I think that's probably a pretty good idea to get an agreement on what the relevant conduct is, because that's what the dispute ends up being.
See, I believe that's a policy decision made by people above my pay grade. And that's, I've been in the office for 6.5 years, and that's just the way we've always generally done it. There are certain cases where we come to an agreement. I know in the Eastern District of Wisconsin, it's a formality that's done every time.
To agree on relevant conduct?
Generally speaking, it's my understanding.
I know in the Eastern District that we tried... The judges in the district urge the parties to try to agree on relevant conduct.
I certainly agree with you. It would have made life a lot easier in this case, and we probably wouldn't be down here.
Maybe that's something you ought to recommend you do in the Western.
I know they're listening, so.
You'd be in a new administration pretty soon.
if there are any other questions, I'll just turn to the waiver issue here. The defendant plainly made a tactical decision. At the outset of the sentencing hearing, the judge confirmed that the defendant, and through her counsel, she was only interested in challenging this discrete set of prescriptions. They confirmed that was the case. And at the conclusion of the evidentiary portion of sentencing, Judge Crabb raised right away whether she should revoke acceptance of responsibility. And I made clear to the court that the only reason I thought it was appropriate to still give acceptance was the fact that the defendant was not contesting the broad array of prescriptions that were alleged in the indictment, and the court agreed that because the defendant was doing that, she would not revoke acceptance of responsibility. Unless there are any questions for me about the waiver issue, forfeiture issue, I would just rest on my brief and ask you to affirm the conviction and sentence in this case. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Threlko?
The court's assertion that the prescriptions were outside the normal course of professional practice doesn't distinguish, as Chube required the court to distinguish, between negligence and bad practice and actual intent to act as a pusher rather than as a medical provider. As we see it, that's a big problem here that Chube gave very specific instructions on how courts are to handle this case, and apparently everybody was oblivious of that decision, which had taken place almost a month before sentencing. In terms of the question of forfeiture versus waiver, this court's precedent in James and Kimbrough crack cases such as Padilla makes it clear that a waiver has to be knowing and voluntary, and that there has to be a tactical reason for giving up a right or an issue. And in this case, again, because counsel was apparently unaware of Chube and the distinctions it made between, again, bad practice and actually illegal conduct, it doesn't make sense to assert that counsel and Ms. Rosenberg were making a tactical decision to give up these rights or waive or to waive these issues. If there are no further questions, thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.